Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News. I want to welcome everybody to our podcast, or some may call simulcast. We are live on our Facebook. We're also on Blog Talk Radio. And we also, listed in various rooms on the internet. And I just want to thank everybody, especially my co-host, Brother Satavi Jahi. We have just a few people on with us today, Mr. Neil Spencer from out of, I believe, North Carolina or Texas. Oh. I believe. And we have Ms. Nala Ali from Maryland, I think the Eastern Shore or Southern Maryland. Brother Rico, he's from Baltimore, but he's out of town. And Brother Satavi Jahi from North Carolina as well. And your truly, David Murphy from Baltimore, Maryland. And Mr. William Parker just joined us. Look, ladies and gentlemen, tonight, sometime we have guests and sometime we just have open conversation. Tonight, I'm going to have open conversation with what I like to call my panel, those who are on Zoom. And I want to explain something before we get into our conversation and before we bring my brother on, Brother Satavi Jahi, is this. You know, as the year is coming to a close, you know, autumn is setting in and we are putting together, as we speak, our last issue of the year. And of course, you know, we're about to approach these holidays, you know, the Thanksgiving, the Christmas, the Hanukkah, the, everything else in between. A lot of people go through a lot of changes during this time of year. We go through changes every time, every day, really, but, you know, especially this time of year because it rekindles so many memories about loved ones, some up days and some bad days. But a lot of us who are still with us, who have been through a multitude of storms, you know, sometimes we can let people know just by experience that this too shall pass. And no matter what you're facing, you know, God gives us enough strength to carry on, you know, even though the load get heavy sometimes. But we still must carry on. And so again, ladies and gentlemen, before we start our conversation, I would like to start it off with a good, solid, positive information. And that's what my brother brings to the table, Brother Satavi Jahi. You got it, sir.
All right. Thank you, David. And this podcast goes out to two of our longtime listeners who are no longer here, one by the name of Sam Rock, who was my next-door neighbor here in Rocky Mount and a longtime activist. And then Saladin Muhammad, who was chairperson for Black Workers for Social Justice here in Rocky Mount, longtime warrior and activist, put in many, many years. And just want to again reach out to their families, say we offer our condolences and our sympathy. And I had a chance to go to Sam Rock's funeral this past Saturday, and the place, the church was packed. And Brother Nehemiah Smith did a great homecoming service for Brother Sam Rock, and his family was very, very pleased with that. And so say to the activist community, we never know the hour, never know the time. None of us live forever in the flesh. We can live forever in the hearts and minds of people. And that's why the reading for today is very, very important. It says, don't get too comfortable. We must define ourselves by the best that's in us, not the worst that has been done to us. Edward Lewis, publisher of Essence Magazine. As you pursue your goals, attempting new and various methods of reaching your objectives, you will experience uncomfortable moments. Count on it. That's part of the process. Anything new, different, untried lies outside the comfort zone in the land of the uncomfortable. As you approach the edges of your comfort zone, you begin to experience a host of negative emotions, fear, guilt, unworthiness, depression, and possibly anger. These are feelings that usually accompany people who say, I'm uncomfortable. For many, the explanation I'm uncomfortable is sufficient reason not to venture out. It's little wonder, then, that these people seldom reach their dreams. They choose comfort over goals. The subtle ways in which the comfort zone keeps you from your dreams are remarkable. The comfort zone reacts with, don't do it, messages long before we begin to take action. When we even think about doing something new and different, the comfort zone kicks in. Since birth, we have been programmed to do whatever it takes to avoid fear, guilt, unworthiness, and hurt. Therefore, we think about something and something more comfortable. To reach your goal, to live out your dream, you must choose moment by moment to take steps in the direction of your dream, no matter how uncomfortable you may feel. Reaching one's goal is not a matter of comfort. It's a matter of achievement. The best way out is always through. So whatever it is that they would open up with, whatever it is that you're going through, this too shall pass. You know, it takes a lot. Every day deal with the challenges and stuff of life. I was out of town, and I got back, found out that Sam Rock had passed, and he had been sick. But, you know, hey, and I miss the conversations we used to have, and I still talk to him in my prayers and my dreams. And Saladin Muhammad, I mean, what can I say about that brother? I mean, he was tremendous. Person, we called him the anchor here in Rocky Mount because of the things that he did for people and stuff that he did for Black Workers for Social Justice. So two pillars in our community that definitely would be missed here in the Rocky Mount area and Saladin nationwide. So I just want to again thank them for their years of service, their years of work, the things that they did to make our days a little bit more pleasant. With that said, David, back to you.
Man, boy, I appreciate that. I appreciate you anyway, sir, but that's a powerful message because that kind of coincides to where I'm going this evening. You know, and my heart and my prayers go out to those families that you lost, brother, because here in Baltimore, you know, for those who don't know, and you most likely wouldn't know, but there's some strong brothers and sisters right here in the Baltimore area, soldiers, people who have put in work, who have dedicated their lives, their works to uplift us as people. There was one brother who used to work in the prison ministry. Just that's one of the things. But his name was Brother Ellsworth Bay. Had passed last week. And then we have a sister in Zynga. Another sister who put in work over the years. She was a radio personality. And so many other things. And then we had quite a few of our editors who were lost family members. Pastor Steve Turner lost his wife, and our brother Kendrick Tillman lost a father and a daughter. And our Tuesday night host Kathleen Murphy lost a loved one in Connecticut, I believe it was. And Dr. Ortiz has been going through with some of her family members. And those are the ones we know of, but you know, as we continue to live, we are continually dying. And new life come in just this past Saturday. I just celebrated my grandbaby's first year birthday. And I had opportunity to attend her party with a whole bunch of children. And I was looking at all that new young life running, ripping and running, and they was having themselves a ball, not knowing what's going to come before them. See, they was living in the moment, the children was. 1, 2, 3 years old, so they've been indoctrinated yet. Their minds haven't even really been pausing yet. But yet, I was just watching the full of life, the way God intended it to be. And so to those who lost family members, And so many things going on. Of course, y'all know, you can't help but know that the Queen of England had her funeral there. And, you know, you couldn't help it if you had a television on, you know, it was flashing that. and everything. But, you know, and it just makes you think, well, it makes me think, again, tomorrow's not promised to us. And so if the day is all, this moment is all we have, you know, don't take it for granted, you know, because death will remind you that it's inevitable that this will happen to you, to everybody you know. And so that's where it always has been. And until something different happens, that's where it's always going to be. But ladies and gentlemen, for those of us who still breathe, still has life in our body. And yes, it's going to be difficult times. People all over the world, houses are being burned up through these major fires, flooding. All sorts of calamity is happening to people, losing their homes, and people abusing other people. And, you know, with all of this, you know, negativism going on, but yet on the flip side, it's people helping people. People supporting people when they're going through difficult times. People are standing in the gap. People who have strong shoulders who will help other people in spite of what they're going through. And so, you know, that reminds me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to take this time to share a little about who we are, what we do, and why we do it. We are the National Black Community. The majority of people on here are involved or editors, are supporters of the National Black Unity News. And to those who are on Facebook Live and Blog Talk Radio, I just want to extend your invitation because this is a unique opportunity to get involved with this great publication. And because this publication is so unique, and I tell people, I don't say I am the publisher of this publication, but I'm not the originator of this. It just came by divine inspiration. By God, just to make it plain to you. And I was just obedient to the God. See, just like each and every one of God has prepared us in our gifts and talents to do certain things in life. Some of you are experts with your speech. Some of you can write books and authors. And some of you can do so. I mean, I'm around so many people who have took their gifts. And they study their gifts, they practice their gifts, and then their gifts are making a way for them. And unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of people have certain gifts, never nurtured them, never planted the seeds of them, and unfortunately, and they die that way. And so to those of you who are listening to me, if you have a gift, a talent, something that you love doing that can benefit mankind, I encourage you greatly to look at your gifts, study your gift. You know, I mean, seriously, because your gift can and will make a way for you. But not your gifts are not for you, though. I say they can make a way for you, but your gifts are just what it said. It's a gift. And most times, you know, if you're thinking about giving up your talents, your skills, your services. And we have so many on here that's involved with this stuff because that's one of the criteria. That you have to be doing something that's going to help mankind, especially my kind. When I say my kind, I'm talking about black melanated people. Because there is a disparity in the world. There is those who think they're higher, some think they're lower, some, I don't know where some people mind it, but facing reality, mankind is really messed up because of the small differences in people that separate, you know, and so they use that as separatism. You know, it's not just a black and a white thing. It's a black on a black thing. I used to tell people that when I was a little boy, I used to live in a place called Sandtown in Baltimore, and there was a street called Pennsylvania, a major street, a well-known street, Pennsylvania Avenue. I lived in the 600 block, and I had people. Some of my neighbors live in the 500 block. In the 600 block back in them days, you know, we used to play against each block, you know, blocks. 600 block would play the 500 block. We played Pennsylvania. We played all the little blocks around the neighborhood. Back in them days, I don't know what was going on. I guess they call it baby boom. But it was a lot of children on every block, enough to have baseball teams. And, you know, to play another block, they had enough children to play baseball. But if anything, if one of the people in the 500 block got in an alteration or, you know, a fight or misunderstanding with somebody in the 500 block, then automatically those of us in the 600 block folk, the enemies get those in the 500 block. And we went to the same school. We went to the, you know, we was in the same classes. You know, we was in the same economic, sociology and everything. But yet because the one lived in the 600 block, one lived in the 500 block, that was enough to separate us. So it's always, like I say, tribes of China, tribes of Africans have always found ways to find differences in each other. But what the National Black Unity Music Stadium is doing, we're trying to unite us. We're not trying to put small differences that will separate us. We are creating, as a matter of fact, we have created. It's nowhere in my lifetime have I seen so much unity, and that's through the National Black, the people behind the scenes. You see, those of you who don't know, the National Black Unity News is a collaboration of people who not only come who have various gifts and talents, but not only have gifts and talents, but they're willing to support this publication with financial, with their own finances. And that's what makes us so unique. That's what makes us so different, because we do this out of love. We want to share with people our gifts and talents, because our gifts and our talents can enhance people's qualities of life. We can share information that actually has saved some people's lives. We have put out information that changed the courses of people's lives. See, words are powerful. They're powerful. But when you've got something to back up those words, it's even more powerful. And so I just want to thank those who are on here this evening, especially those involved with the National Black Unity News. As I was mentioning earlier, we are working on our last issue of the year. And for those who have not yet submitted their information, we still have about a week left. And get it to me as soon as possible, because people are waiting on you, waiting on your information. Your words, like I said, does not come back void. Your words will be heard. We don't know who needs to hear your word. But nevertheless, words are so powerful. It can change people's lives. And actually, it's changing our lives. It changed my life. So I just want to thank each and every one of you who have participated with. And I want to thank my brother, Satavi Jahi, for dealing with us for many. Him and I go back 30, 40 years. You know, we've been out there fighting on the front lines, and we had the battle scars to prove it. We still out there fighting, because a soldier, a lion, as I was told, this African proverb, is that an eagle will always be an eagle. A lion will always be a lion until the day they die. They don't sit up and tell me, I'm going to retire from being a lion. I'm going to stop being an eagle. No, they're going to roar and soar to the day they die. And those of you who have a calling on your life, those distant towns will not let you go. You can say, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to do that. But you know personally, you would never have no peace or know you would have no rest. So you might as well just get up and do what must be done. Because, like I say, your gifts and your talents can be such a blessing to somebody else. And so tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're just going to have an open discussion. And for those of you who don't know me by now, don't know me that well by now, when we have this open discussion, I just call you out. I call you by name. Just ask you a few questions. What do you think? What's your thoughts? Because, again, words do not come back word, and words are powerful. Your thoughts, your answers may be a blessing to those of us who are listening to you or who will listen to you. And I didn't mention this, that this is a live broadcast right now, but it will be aired all week long. So we don't know how far or where this conversation goes to or where it goes because of the internet. But again, tonight, the subject matter that I kind of picked up was, you know, black men, black women, stand up. It's time for us, you know, like I say, tomorrow's not promised to us. So while there's still daylight, we can still work. We can still share information. We have the tools to do it. I tell people, man, I'm one blessed man. Now, some people think about blessings because you have a lot of money. That's one way, you know, you can be blessed. But, you know, another bless is that you have a gift or a talent that you enjoy doing, and you know your gifts and talents can help other people. It's another blessing. Like, say, for instance, somebody like a David Murphy. Now, I'm not what you may call a very educated person. I'm talking about system-wise. A lot of you on here have doctorate degrees, masters, and everything else. And I'm glad for you, you know, because we need all the information, all the education we can get. But then some of us on here, like myself, I have a GED, dropped out in the seventh grade. But you know what? I do publish a national newspaper. I do professional commercials. I edit videos and do all sorts of things because God has blessed me with them talents. And my talents have made a way for me. It sustained me pretty much all my life. And that's why I say I'm such a blessed man, because when I get up in the morning, I have something to do, something that I want to do. And I just mentioned to you that I just went to a birthday party Saturday. I hung out with my little one-year-old granddaughter. But not only did I hung out with her, but I had other relatives there too. Had about 8 grandchildren there. My son and my daughter were there. And I'm watching them, watching all these. I'm sitting there, they running to and fro. And I was just looking back and looking at them watching, and I was just saying how blessed I am to have all of these people in my life that God has blessed me with. And so that brings me to this point. Yes, I have gifts and talents. And I mentioned to you earlier, it's not to be poured out on me, to be poured out on others. And while I was there Saturday, it was more clear than ever. Because my grandparents, great-grandparents, my ancestors made a way for me, a better life, because what they had to endure, I had to go nowhere near. I had to go through something nowhere near as much as they had to go through. And the things I do today is not only because of who you are and my people, but one of the major reasons is for my family, for my children and their children's children. And I look at their little lives, somebody has to provide food, shelter, education for the children. And if we live the whole lifetime and don't leave nothing, that's a waste of life. And so one of the reasons why I'm here, ladies and gentlemen, to make a way for my babies, my future babies, my great-great-grandchildren who I would never see, help lay the foundation, because people, so many people in our lives that did that for us. And so, again, I just want to say, stand up, black man, stand up, black woman. We have work to do while we still have daylight. And so today, there's a gentleman on here. He don't know I'm going to call on him, but Dr. Leroy McKenzie, can you unmute yourself, sir? Dr. Leroy McKenzie, if you can unmute yourself, I would appreciate it, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, loud and clear. How are you this evening?
I am doing quite all right, quite all right. How is everybody? Good evening, good evening, good evening.
Did I catch you off guard?
A little bit, yes, sir. Yeah. Doing a little bit of work, too, so.
Yeah, I know you're double-tasking. It's a wonder you ain't doing 2 or 3 shows right now. You know, but anyway, Dr. McKenzie, he does not only he's an author, he is a podcaster. I mean, this brother does so many shows. I mean, this brother involved with so many men organizations and other organizations. This brother is an extremely busy person, but seeing like everything he do or he does is helping other people. And he's an avid, you know, reader, you know, he's a sharp brother. And Dr. McKenzie, I just want to ask you a question. And everybody has their reasons for doing this and for doing that. I just want to ask you a simple, why do you dedicate your life in helping other people?
Well, the major reason is it's my assignment is to help others. And that's what I believe that God has put in me, that stems from my parents. They were always, they were individuals. My mom's still here. My dad's gone on, but his life was a life of purpose and helping others. My mom's the same way. And even my family as a whole, we've all taken on that task of helping others, making, as my pastor says, make life better for someone else. and that's what I try to do with my business, and even the organizations, as you mentioned, that I'm a part of. It's all about making us, our community, better. Because if we don't, as you always say, if not us, then who? And if not now, then when? And that's what it's all about. It's the expediency of now, having that urgency and understanding that our communities aren't going to get better without us participating in it. Our communities can't thrive without us thriving in it, and having and being intentional of giving back, being intentional of wanting to see us do better. And that's the main reason, is just wanting to see us do better and be better.
Let me ask you another question then. I'm going to get mm-hmm. If y'all on this call, you know, I'm going to get to y'all sooner or later. But let me ask you another question. Now, mm-hmm. I you know, I'm no respect. God has to say it. I'm no respecter of person. That means I don't really have problems with other groups or race of people. You know, I know some of them have problems with me, but you know, personally, I don't. But I have a special call out for my people, Black melanated people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I'm shunning nobody else, but you know, this is where I believe I'm led to go to uplift my people, Black people, because like I said, there is a disparity. And do you have a special affinity for us, or is just a general thing with you?
No, it's all about us first. With me, it's all about us first, and it's all about making sure that our communities are as thriving or as great as they can be. And if we're not pouring into our communities, then who will? Because there's no other community that pour into our communities. I'm sorry, I haven't seen it, and the people they do to a certain extent. I'll say it that way, but the majority of our businesses aren't supported by other ethnic groups. The majority of our educational systems that are in our communities aren't supported by other ethnic groups. It's us that have to fight, scratch, and do whatever we have to do in order to be able to make our communities better. We are the first ethnic group to always assist others, pay into others, support others. But when that support is called upon by us, by others, people want to turn the other way, or they want to, kind of ignore it, act as if, that there aren't any issues that go on in the Black community. So I'm all about us first. Like you, I have no grudges against other communities. Now, I will let them know what they have done and those things that they continue to do that are, that are wrong against us. Yeah, I'm going to let you know that every day, all day, because it's not going to be ignored. I'm talking from, anything from the government and what they need to do, because they play a part in supporting our communities, our educational system, that is, that for all intents and purposes, I've said this before, and I'll keep saying it needs to be totally, totally demolished and rebuilt because of the diseducation, miseducation, whatever you want to call it, of that generation that is in there now, and the disservice that we've done to them as the older generation, and what we haven't poured into them, or those wrong things that we poured into them. So yeah, I'm all about us, our community first, because we have to be. Other communities do the same thing. They put their community before anybody else. So why should we be any different? Why should I be any? I'm not going to be any different than that.
Okay, I appreciate that, sir. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to jump right on there. Ms. Cheryl Briggs, can you hear me?
Yeah.
How you doing this evening?
I'm doing great.
I'm doing fantastic because I'm here. Ms. Briggs.
Yes.
Now, I noticed that you are author as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, a lot of your attention has gone into women.
Mm-hmm.
And let me ask you, why did you chose this particular subject matter to write about, and what encourages you to do such a thing?
I think the most influence that I had to speak to women was something that came out of the way I was living my life. I've always kind of gravitated to people who were not mainstream, not cool, not popular, you know, like the people that's like the wallflowers, the people that just stay in the back, try to be invisible, nobody see. And so I've always been a confidant to women. And if you ask me to name a woman that I've had some experience or some interaction with any time in my life, I could roll my memory and tell you everything that woman went through or everything she survived or what her struggle was. And it wasn't until I wrote my first book, Sister Circle, The Power of Sisterhood, A Guide to Becoming the Woman God Designed You to Be, in 2013, that I realized that God had allowed me to go through a journey in my life in the womanhood, experience. And because I was the kind of person that always, you know, reflected on what I was living, what attributes, characteristics, values, standards were serving me or not serving me. And so I was able to kind of, you know, make some changes, do some different things, process stuff that had happened in my life. And just prior to writing that book, women kept telling me, you need to put that in a book, the things you're sharing with us, other women need to know about this. And of course, I never had a thought to write a book. I never wanted to write a book. I never knew I could write a book. I mean, it's a lot of things we don't know we can do with the help of the Lord. But the day finally came when I heard the Lord saying, you over here trying to help this one do this, that, and the other. They're not trying to do anything. You need to go over there and finish writing that book because you're holding up people's blessings. And so when I realized how important it was to take the journey of womanhood seriously for myself, I learned things on that journey that were so similar to other women. It doesn't matter where you're a woman around the world. You're going through the same kinds of things. You have the same kind of heartache, the same kind of pain, same hopes, dreams, same, you know, lack of value, self-worth, not recognizing, you know, how we make impacts to everybody around us. It's like as a woman, we do a lot of things, but we don't know the value of it. We don't recognize that we do those things, whether we're heartbroken or sick or, you know, we're going through all kinds of relationship issues or we're being abused or abandoned. It don't matter. As a woman, we just do it. Whatever got to be done, whatever comes our way, okay, we on it. We're going to do what we can. And then I realized that all those things that women do for others, we're unable to do for ourselves and we're unable to do for one another. So it kind of went into like a movement that if women would do half the things they do for everybody else, for themselves and one another, then we'll be in a better position to take care of our men, our children, our family, our churches, our community, and our world. And you can't do what God has called you to do, whether you're a man or a woman, if you don't heal, if you don't recognize who God has created us to be. And when you put the title of this message tonight, you know, Black Woman, Black Man, Stand Up, I say, you know what, I got something to say. God created men amazingly, and he created women amazingly. And each of us have gifts, talents, ability, attributes, qualities, temperaments, values, standards, personalities that the other one don't have. So we keep trying to do stuff by ourselves. You ain't got to have a wife. You ain't got to have a husband. You ain't got to have a girlfriend. You don't have to have a boyfriend. We just need to work together as Black women and Black men. get yourself some black women, men, get yourself some black men, women, and start working together. There are things that women do that men don't do, and there's things that men do that women don't do. We don't need to try to be without what that other one can add to us. I was talking to one of my brothers. He know who he is if you hear what I say. There are things that women do that men don't do, and there's things that men do that women don't do. But some things that we women do could help you guys do more and better, and there's some things you men do that can help us do more and better. The problem is, women and men don't recognize that we need each other. God made women and men to work together. He created us to come together and partner. They don't have to be in a relationship of romance and sex. It's just if you're my brother and I'm your sister and you're my sister and I'm your brother, then we can just come together and say, you know, as a woman, you got this talented skill and ability. You know how to do this. And as a man, I know how to do this. Come on, you show me how you do what you do and you help me. I show you what I know how to do and I'll help you. Together we get it done. We have to stop trying to be islands unto ourselves. It's not men against women. It's not women against men. We got to realize that until we can work together, recognize that a woman needs a man and a man needs a woman for more than sexual pleasures and romance. You don't need to have a girlfriend. You don't need to have a wife. Get some of these sisters. Befriend them. Get some of these brothers. Befriend them. Men and women can do so much stuff if they would just get romance and sex out the picture. It's so much more that we give to each other than sexual relationships. So I was talking to somebody and like, you know, if I had to do the things that this brother shared with me to do, I'd have put it in the suit, I'd have put the clothes in the washing machine when I got in, I'd have put the thing on the stove to start cooking, I'd have helped my son do the homework. I mean, it's like we are equipped differently. I don't need to do everything. And you don't need to do everything.
That's right.
You need to be my right hand. I need to be your left. You need to be my left hand. I need to be your right. We need to work together. Stop trying to be islands by yourself. You can only be all the men that you can be with God helping you and putting women in your life to make that happen. We as women can only be the best women that we can be if God help us and put men in our life. So just come together.
Right.
Stop looking at women like, you know, oh, this is my next sexual conquest. Stop looking at men like, you know, use my next meal ticket. It's so much we need, so much we can give to each other that we just need to give it. We just need to give it. You're talking about having a good relationship with a woman or having a good relationship with a man. If you get a woman and you don't have sex with her, you get a woman and you don't become romantically involved, you got something amazing. And we women get the same thing from you guys if we don't look to you guys for sex and money. If we just allow the best of who y'all are, come in a platonic relationship. You're my brother. You're my sister. I care about you. You care about me. We care about us. Let's go to work. Let's go to work.
All right. Got you, sister. Got you. I appreciate that. And, now, I'm going to move right along because I'm going to try to get as many people as I possibly can, you know, from a different perspective. Now, there's a brother on here who I've known for many years. I don't know if he want to speak or not, but I'm going to ask him. Mr. Bill Curtis, can you unmute yourself, sir? Mr. Bill Curtis, if you can.
Unmuted.
Yes, sir. How you feeling this evening?
Okay.
I'm glad to hear that. Let me say this about this brother here. Now, Bill goes back, way back, even when I first started out. He was one of the first people I met on my journey. And he was doing some wonderful things. Matter of fact, printed up some caps and T-shirts for me way back in the day, you know. And he always had this type of business where he does I forgot to know how they call that, but, you know, the ink pens, the hats, the all of that. what you call that service, sir?
Promotional items, imprint promotional items, and that's me.
Yeah. And
imprint promotional items, Dave.
Yes, sir. Okay, and also, you know, one day, about a month or two ago, he and I was just sitting out front one day, just holding general conversation, and we started talking about symbols, signs, wonders. You know how powerful symbols are sometimes. And now, you know, I used to look at my walls, and they were pretty bare. You know, I didn't have, you know, maybe a few pictures up there. But because of that conversation, I have, at the beginning of every year, I'm looking at them. Now, you can't see it, but that's why I'm looking around. I have a copy of every, you know, we've been around 6 years now, you know, and dating back to 2017, first issue, the initial issue of the National Black Unity News, and every January I got an issue right now in a frame on the wall. I also have drawings of my grandchildren. I have a picture up here now of my ancestors, my grandfather, all those that have been deceased in a frame. Then I don't get that many awards, but now in the last year or two, I got a couple of them, and I have them on the wall. I even had my very first newspaper way back from 1978 or 87, somewhere back in there. My very first news, and that's in the frame. And I also have a black flag, the red, black, and green flag, which I got from Brother Bill Curtis on the wall. Now, because we were talking about symbolism, now when I get up in the morning, I look at what I've done, where I've been, where I want to go. I look at my grandchildren. I look at my ancestors. And this is just getting up, just looking around these four walls. And I see so much history. But then again, I see so much work that need to be done. All this because of a conversation this brother put up. Now, you know, I used to get up, man, and, you know, sometimes I spend the whole day thinking about things I need to do and I want to do this. I should be doing that. But now I have quick reminders. And a lot of y'all call them affirmations. Some of y'all have affirmation boards and stuff. But this is my affirmation. All of this stuff that I see on all four walls. And I want to thank this brother because but that's what he does. You know, he has flags from all nations and stuff, but, you know, especially the black flags. And I asked him this many times, but I want him to share it with you. See, Bill is one of those type people. He's an entrepreneur. He had worked for city government. His brother's an activist, man. He's a writer. You know, this brother, man, has many resources. I mean, many tools that God has blessed him with. But one thing I do know that he ever comes, because this is what I'm talking about, to even black men, black women stand up. And Bill is very social conscious about us. And Bill, you could, like I said, you've done so many different things. I want to ask you the same question I asked a few other people. Why are you so conscious about us? And why are you so concerned about us when you can just easily take care of you and go about your business?
I like the black stuff.
Okay.
You know, I do. I think it's important. I think we all need to like the black stuff and not be in our heads in duality about it. Like you hear black folks talking. I wish I could recall part of the conversation happening here tonight, but I was doing something, trying to cook some food, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we talk about, it was a thing about, you asked someone about, are you, like, your paper's for, you know, melanated people, black people. And sometimes that question is raised, right? One of the things that we say is like, but I'm for all people. You know, like that's a necessary thing to say. It really is totally unnecessary. I've talked to Korean people, customers of mine. You know, they're for the Korean people. They support their own community and their own particular efforts. But we're in a whole bunch of duality. But to answer your question, I like the black stuff. I mean, you know. I think it probably saved my life in a certain way, you know, instead of going down a certain path. You know, we all have these, I call them horror stories in our lives, you know. Everybody's got a struggle. Right. Okay. Let's get over it and live our life or attempt to live our life from the possibility of what it is we say we're up to. So, you know, when you mentioned the flag business, because I like the black stuff and I like geography and the way it evolved from just a button, the I Love Being Black button, then I had the black, red, black, and green flag. It goes back to when Obama first ran, you know, selling Obama wares, and I was in D.C. setting up, and people, you know, D.C. is a whole different kind of, well, it's a different city than Baltimore, and more international. So people would come up and say, do you have a flag of Japan? Do you have a flag of whatever, Italy? I said, well, come back next week and I'll have it. So I built up a big inventory of international flags because I like the black stuff. So that's my cultural thing. But the other aspect is the promotional items. You know, that goes back years. It goes back to the 80s when I had my storefront on North Avenue. 3046 West North Avenue, right at the corner of Rosedale and North Avenue. All the businesses are gone now. It's a apartment block of apartments. Anyway, I was there when I helped you out, Dave, and helped others. Learned a lot. But I do what I do. Number one, I like business. My father had a store.
Let me ask you this question, because we had that, in that same conversation, we were talking about some of the people that kind of motivated us back in those days. We had some brothers in the community that were some serious, serious black men and women who put in some work, who paved some serious ways for us. We had a guy named Earl Colbert. We had guys who owned black supermarkets and stuff like that, and they would pull young brothers up.
Yeah.
And give us pearls of wisdom. And not only that, they would even help financially, too.
Yeah, I did work for Stop, Shop, and Save. I coordinated there. I took Mr. Henry Baines. He had one store. It was at Wally and Park Heights. This was in the 80s, right? So I was driving up Park Heights and saw these little pennants he had out there. I was young and very brave then. I'm more brave now, but I was very brave then. So I called the man up, you know. I must have been 30-something years old, you know. Full of it. Hungry, as Les Brown still says. Got to be hungry. And I called Baines up, you know, Boz, Bill Curtis with Horizon Distributors. I was driving up to Park Heights, and I saw your pennants out there, and they looking kind of raggedy. I can help you out with that. All right, come on in and see me. So I went to see Baines, and at the time, he and his wife worked together. He's at the other desk. He's over here. And she says, honey. And then that young man calls me up and said my pennants were kind of raggedy outside. He could help me out. And they both got a very good laugh out of that. But Baines, so that evolved into the Academic Achievement Awards, coordinating his Academic Achievement Awards program as his market expanded. You know, David, I was thinking about this today as I was driving around. Well, today is Monday. This past weekend, I drove down I think it's Washington or Wolf Street, where Brown's Supermarket used to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it flashed in my mind. I said, now, we're all running around now talking about there's a food desert. There used to be markets in our neighborhoods owned by black people.
Yep.
Things happen. They are no longer there. The Stop, Shop, and Save. super bright. I did some work for them. They allowed me opportunity. But that crossed my mind, you know. It's like, damn, a lot of our shit's gone. A lot of our businesses are just zip. And the kids are growing up only seeing Hata Kong, Korean people. Now it's the Central Asians coming here. And they have no reference point for a black person being on the other side of the counter taking money. That really bothers me. They have no relationship.
It should bother you. It should bother all of us. You know?
Yeah. They have no experience. No, just call it an experience. An experience of going to the store. You can't say they're going to spend 5-10 cents now. Say they got $5. They're going there and get a Pepsi and some chips and get a little bit of change. But they have no experience of, like, giving their money to a black person and then the black person giving them change. It's weird. It's a real terrible situation. Anyway, but Baines helped me out. I took an academic achievement awards program from one school, which was Edgewood Elementary, sits near Edgecombe Circle, off Park Heights and Wildwood area, to about 28 schools. Coordination, developed a sign, took the idea from he had the idea. He said to me, he says, well, you know, I give, because the man talked to me, Dave. I don't know why he talked to me, but the man would talk to me, right? I guess I presented myself well, you know. My father had a store, in a little corner store. He would always wear a tie, right? He would be in that store like he were in a Fortune 500 company. But he had a raggedy sweater on, and customers would tease him about it. But he always had his little tie. So I presented myself to things like that. But took that program, expanded that program. That man would sit down. I got a little retainer for running the program, developing it from his idea in his head of giving. He said, you know, I give the kids $5 for every A. He says, it's getting expensive. I got to give out trophies or something. But I can help you out with that. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I went home and figured out the concept and wrote it up. Joe Mann's Awards. If any of you guys know Joe Manns, Invisible Joe Manns?
Yes.
Joe Manns was in his house at that time. And you can run into Joe Manns today and say, hey, you know Bill Curtis? He used to get trophies from you. And a big smile will come off his face because Joe was like, Joe and I helped each other out a lot. I helped him grow. And he, you know, produced trophies. And, of course, I got the order from for all these schools. A trophy for... Excuse me 1 minute.
Friend Allen.
Yeah, Dave, I'm here.
Yeah, you know I'm coming to you next.
Okay.
Dr. Nala Ali.
Yes, sir, Mr. David.
I'm coming after you, too.
Oh, God.
I can wrap it up. I don't want to dominate the time, Dave, you know, but
okay.
Black business was here. Now I will say this. Let me say this in closing. I saw this happening in the 80s, right? The Koreans started coming in. They came in with cash. Literally. I was able to get business from the Korean Businessman Association because I had Korean customers. Quite a few. Some of you may remember Hercules. Auto parts.
Yeah, I recall.
Okay. Hercules was here. They had a store in Kingsville, Fremont Avenue, Annapolis, somewhere out Windsor Mill, and two more that I can't call up right now. Oh, one was in not Irvington.
Yeah, but Bill, you were talking about this association.
Oh, yes, 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 man. Okay, let me get back. Let me key in on that, and then I'm going to shut it down. So there was a Korean guy. You know, I know some Asian history from going to school and all. I took a lot of Asian history. So I understand the Koreans. If you get business from Koreans, If they trust you and you deliver, they'll cut. They call me. Go, Kurt, I need XYZ. I used to do forms for them. But the Korean Businessman Association, young guy, we're all younger, name is 19. No, forget him. So, you know, I did their business cards. And the thing is, this was before desktop publishing really was big. I had a Caucasian associate who had an Apple computer, which could do stuff. So Korean script, he set it all up for me. I asked Nanking once, I said, how do you guys do this? You know, how do you do this? How do you, the stores just pop up? He says, Bill Kirk, we have something called the GA. He says, because let me just say, so, you know, Korean stores open up and they're fully stocked. You're not opening up like halfway stocked. They open up like bam. He says, we have something called the GA. We borrow money from the GA. We borrow money from the GA. It's a group. I don't know who runs it. I don't know what element runs it, but they borrow from the guy, they pay back into the guy, and they work their business. We all know how they work their business. They work the business. They put up with a lot. They work the business, and they pay back into the guy. So it's not like they run into the bank, you know? They're not like looking for a grant. They use their own money. It's very cooperative. Very cooperative. My life, I had a Korean guy. He had a repair shop right at Ashburton and North Avenue. Used to do his forms. He invited me to his wedding. I was young and dumb and didn't go. You know, I would have been in the family, you know. But it's good. It was just a good experience. But the guy is how they finance. Now, these guys that are coming in now, the Central Asians, the Pakistanis, the ones that are from India, Pakistan, that area, they're coming in with money. And they also are self-helping to finance each other, I suspect.
Yeah.
You know,
they do have their money. Yeah, they have associations and stuff that I've met some of them. But I appreciate you, sir, for your input because, like I say, you have the history. You've been here. You talked to some of the movers and shakers. Now, Fran, how are you this evening?
I am so good that there's more than one of me. Can't you see us?
Oh, yeah, I see. And you're another author that authored several books. And Fran is in North Carolina as well right now, but she's been here, there, and everywhere. But she was based in Baltimore, but she's not originally a Baltimorean. But Fran is an activist. She's so many. I mean, I can go on and on and on, you know, about Fran. But Fran, I'm just asking black men, black women, how do we stand up? How do we stand in the gap? Where have we been? Where we born? What can we do to uplift our people? Now, in your case, you write about uplifting people to motivate people to do for self. And I like to know, sometimes I like to know the why people do certain things. Man, you could have chose about a lot of things. You've been in the political arena. You've been, you know, you've just been there. You're an entrepreneur. When I first met you, you had a secretarial school. I mean, our service and stuff. I mean, you've just been involved with so many different things. But what turned you into this motivational guru that you are today?
Wow. Well, let me first say that, what do they say? The mother of necessity is the mother of invention or whatever it is. And it was necessary. I started a business because I need to make money and the white man wasn't paying me enough. So I decided I was going to make some of my own and they could pay me too. So that's how I ended up getting into business. But I don't know, Dave, I do it because I can. I don't need a reason to do the right thing. God has gifted me with so many different skills and talents and abilities and ideas and all this stuff. And I think it would be really selfish of me if I didn't share them. He gave them to me to give away. He didn't give them to me to keep. So my mom would tell me that, you know, diversity would be my friend. Don't just look at Black people. Don't just look at white people. Look at people, because everybody has something that you can use, and you have something that everybody else can use too. And all you have to do is make the connection. So I would do that. But my grandmother was really adamant that I know God, that I trust in God, that I believe in God. And that was one of the things that tied me to the church. Now, my Aunt Alfie, she taught me to believe in myself, to believe in God too, trust in God, but to believe in me, what I could do, because I could do some stuff. I just had to believe in myself. I could not allow other people's limited opinion of my ability interfere with me developing into the greatness that would be mine if I would just seize it. And so I did that. And, you know, I was smart in school, not because I was so gifted, but because I paid attention. Like, my parents were real straight. You go to school to learn. You don't go to school to make friends. So although I had friends in school, that was not my focus. My focus was getting them grades, because that's what kept me from getting that switch. You know, they didn't play. You didn't get the grades, you got the switch. You want the switch, just come home with a C or a D. As far as my priority or my focus, of course it's going to be people that look like me, you know? And if Black people wasn't the focus, then those people that poured into me would never have poured into me. So Black people is always going to be my number one priority, my focus. But then I think that I focus on believers, other people that believe like I believe. And sometimes they don't look like me, but they believe like me. And then I focus on the children, because somebody has got to pour into these kids. Sometimes their parents aren't able. You know, you can't teach children what you never learned yourself. So sometimes somebody else has got to step in and do that. And maybe they don't have sense enough to even understand it or to know it. But when you see it and you recognize it, you have a responsibility to make sure that the child doesn't get left by the wayside just because they're not your children by blood. Does not mean they are not your responsibility morally. So you just do it because you can, because you don't need a reason to do the right thing. And then the elderly, that's another focus. You know, we all gonna get old. We all gonna get old. Some of us gonna get there sooner than some other, but we all gonna.
Some of us are already there.
Some of us already there. That's right. But at the end of the day, if you don't teach the young people how to treat you now, they're not going to know how to treat you when you need them to really take care of you. So you got to take the time and teach them well now. You know, I would tell people all the time, I have to teach my children how to drive, because I don't want them pushing my wheelchair in front of no bus. I want to be in the car. I want to be on the sidewalk. Okay, so you take the time. And I use my page like that. I use my page to motivate, encourage, and inspire others. That's the whole purpose. Everything that I write, everything that I put out is either to motivate somebody, encourage them, or inspire them. Sometimes I educate, but most of the time I'm trying to motivate people to know and to do and to be something different than what they got, because they can. And to that point, I just was talking to another contributing writer that I'm going to sponsor in the paper. And they're going to start in January.
Amen.
Another person who has a lot to say and just need a place to say it. And so I figured, you know, I need to cultivate a space for the birth of discovery, because they're discovering that they have a voice and they need a place to unleash that voice. And I have the resource to create that space. So why wouldn't I do that? So they only had to be three things: teachable, committed, and consistent. Everything else, we can work it out.
That's right.
So I don't know, Dave. I do it because I can. I don't need another reason.
Well, that's good enough reason because you can and you're able.
Yeah.
And I want to appreciate that. But, you know, there were several people that went off. You know, I don't know what happened to them. But there was Leon Purnell was just on here, and he runs a thing in Baltimore called Men and Family Center.
Mm-hmm.
And this brother, another educated brother, but he had dedicated his life. The brother's been through it, you know, but supporting us, family, people coming out of prison. I mean, all sorts of things. Then there was another lady on there called Lady J. I think Dr. Leroy McKenzie, I think she was associated with you. And she's going to be an editor in the paper as well now. But she's dealing with trauma. Trauma, people are going through stuff. You know, that's one of their forte. And then we have on it my brother on here right now, Rico Crowley, who deals with the homeless, the needy, and he, you know, does. I mean, man, we got, like I say, man, I'm surrounded by you know, people that are doers, and we just a small group of us on here right now, but so many. Now I see brother Carl Taser's on here, who's an actor, singer, and so many other things. I got Dr. Ali, but Dr. Ali, I'm going to come to you first. How are you today, young lady?
I'm doing good. I can't complain. God is good. He's a healer and a deliverer, so I'm doing great.
Amen. And Dr. Ali is another author. I met so many authors on here tonight. You know, but that's just the way it is. You know, people not just talking about it. They write about it. They knowledgeable about their conversation. They wouldn't write books about it, you know. But Dr. Ali, is she also into health, wellness, and so many other things? And Dr. Ali, again, you know, you could have chose so many different routes and paths that you could have journeyed on, but what focused you on what you doing right now?
Well, what brought me to the point that I am at now, which is my business, Royal Kingdom Society International, which is what you all have been speaking about tonight as far as our people. You know, during our lifetime, we definitely transitioned from one journey to the next. I started out years ago being battered and abused at a younger age, and it really pushed me to change myself into who I became. And I was in ministry for years because I realized that I was broken spirit, soul, and body. That's the three parts of our human self. And so what I actually did was recreate myself spiritually. I recreated my soul and I recreated myself and became a wellness consultant about my body because I did not like myself. So that is where my business came from. In the beginning, I started teaching young teenagers, young kids, because I was an abused kid. So therefore, I got with the state of North Carolina, and my goal and my life was really for the youth, because nobody in the therapeutic or I guess you can say group homes wanted to deal with teenagers. So I started out dealing with teenagers, and then I ended up dealing with women, and then I started dealing with people as a whole. I opened up a day spa and I began to help people love themselves with their body. I feel that everyone should have balance in their life if your spirit is out of check, you know, if you don't love yourself, if you don't love your body. So I deal with the three essence of man as a whole. But then when I opened up my day spa, I was really faced with racism for the first time in my life. When I went to try to get my loans and everything, the Caucasian people, the questions that they asked me, the things that I went through. So that's when my journey really began for our people, the melanated people, because I saw how, you know, how they treated our communities. But, you know, God is so good because He allowed me to open up my business, and I was able to give into people. I really love just teaching people how to stay stable. We are all wounded, like you said, in some area in our lives. We are here to support each other. And when someone is broken, it's our responsibility to reach out and help in some kind of way. So my life is for, like I said, helping people with their spirit, their soul, and their body, whoever it may be. But the business that I'm working on now, I love it. It's my passion. I've created all kind of products, all kind of things for people to put in their homes. I recognize having Caucasian friends, when you go into their homes, they have all of these things about themselves, about their family, about their history, about their kings, queens. So I've created products that I will be selling real soon. I'm going to be vending started in October with all the products that I have. I have dolls for girls. I just jewelry, all kind of things just for our people to focus on creating an environment for themselves. And it's all about our Black people. But, you know, we are kings, we are queens, and it's time for us to really walk out the door. I'm encouraging our people to stop going out buying all the name brand products, and you should be creating products of your own, you know, being an image consultant. And, you know, I was able to teach, and I do teach people, and you know, how to be queens. When you walk out the door as a woman, you should walk out the door as royalty. You shouldn't walk out looking any kind of way. God is royalty, and I feel like that's how we should present ourselves. So that's where I am in my life right now. My books, I love my books because my first book really deals with, you know, what I went through. It teaches you how to overcome. My second book, Freedom Within the Looking Glass, you know, teaching people you have to look in the mirror at yourself. You have to look at yourself and find out, you know, why am I this way? Why do I act this way? You know, do I have issues from my past? What can I do to better myself? So, I don't want to sound like I'm all over the place, but I'm just trying to tell my story as from when I began as a young teenager as to where I am today. I'm Prophetess Dr. Nyla Ali. How did I become Prophetess Nyla Ali? Because I ministered to people all my life. I was in church all my life, and everybody called me, you know, that particular thing. And then I went to school and I studied in it. So, you know, prophesying, just encouraging, you know, prophesying is only encouraging people, building them up, letting them know that they are somebody. My whole life is to let people know that you can overcome anything that you go through in life. I don't care how bad it is. You know, I've been broken. I've been, you know, I lost my husband. I've been through a lot of things in life, but God helped me overcome in so many different situations. We are overcomer as long as we keep the Most High at the forefront of our lives. When you don't know what to do, you know, you have to get on your knees and pray and seek the face of the Most High, because he will lead you and guide you into all truth. So, like right now, what's going on in our society, as far as the woman king, the controversy that's going on right now, then you're thinking about what's going on with Disney, with the little mermaid. You know, it's our responsibility to, you know, encourage our people that even though they're trying to tear us down, even though they're trying to throw these darts at us, when we get in the midst of people, it is our responsibility to continue to build them up. You know, don't listen to the naysayers, don't listen to the negative, because you have the power on the inside to stand up and be strong. So that's my motto in life. Just balance out your spirit and soul and your body. You know, live long, live strong. You can do anything through Christ.
Amen. I appreciate that. And you know, I'm getting so many nuggets from so many, and you know, they can say I'm always a student. And Brother Carl Tays, how are you this evening? Can you unmute yourself, sir?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. And this young brother is an actor, singer, and he does so many other things. He's an activist. And so what? Let me ask you something. Now, you could have chose many different roles, but what kind of gave you that motivation to do what you're doing this day? And how can you help others to get into what you're doing?
Well, I've always been a part of the arts, because the arts were born within me. Even as a little kid, I was acting and singing, and I started writing plays and stuff like that when I was like 9 or 10 years old. But I was singing since I was like 6 or whatever, and I got into acting as a little boy too. It's just always been my passion, but I just wanted to create different stories or whatever. As far as focusing on Black people, everything I do is about Black people right now. I'm all things Black. I guess I've always been about Black people, but it got even more intense when I started dealing with certain things like being harassed by the cops and police brutality and things like that, being arrested It's because they wanted to fulfill a racist quota of arresting innocent young black men and having to spend the night in a jail cell because of that racist quota, and having this racist cop put his hands around my throat when I told him, when he wanted to fulfill his quota, that I was on seizure medication at the time, which I was, from a brain injury that I suffered as a child. I was on seizure medication at this time in my life. I told him I was on seizure medication and I didn't have my medicine on me. And I was supposed to take a pill at night before I went to bed because I had just come home from a rehearsal for a play. And I went two blocks from where I live at to go get something to eat from this carryout. And this is where this happened. But when I told him that I was on seizure medication, that's when he took both of his pale, nasty white hands and grabbed me around my throat and said that he told me, I'll make you have a fucking seizure. That's, excuse my language. Those were his exact words. He said, I'll make you have a fucking seizure if you don't do what I say. So he put those handcuffs on me and put me in that paddy wagon, all because he wanted to fulfill a racist quota when I hadn't done anything wrong. Okay, so I had to go through that humiliation of being fingerprinted and all that, and having to drop my pants so they make you bend over and look up the backside, because apparently people who deal drugs, hide drugs up there, which I don't even know anything about because I've never dealt drugs and I don't do drugs. At this time, when this happened to me, I was a member of a church, a predominantly black church, where the choir was all black and the musicians were black. I was singing on the choir, but the pastor of that church was a Caucasian man. But anyway, and then I've dealt with police brutality on more than one occasion and harassment. And I've also was in a situation which I talked about on here a few months ago when I was in a hospital where these racist doctors were using black people as guinea pigs and plotting to kill me, and actually told me to start planning my funeral, that I should start planning my funeral. So they were trying to kill me off and stuff like that. So it's things like that that woke me up even more. It turned me from being a little quiet church mouse to a lion with a roar for my people. And as a writer, everything I write is about black people. It's about empowering black people. It's about being thought-provoking to black people. Nobody else is my focus. I don't really care about other races. Not that I hate anybody. I don't hate anybody, but they're not my focus. My focus is black people because there's so much going on between us. We're always worried about making sure we're not divided from other people, meaning being divided from people of other races. But we have division amongst our own people that we need to work on, first and foremost. We have division amongst our own people that need to be healed. Like Malcolm X said, we can't have unity with anyone else until we have unity amongst our own people. So that's my first priority. And I have some black people that get mad at me because I focus on black people, because we've been programmed to worry about everybody else first, to care about white folks more than we care about our own selves. And I'm a spiritual person. Like I said, I was in church and stuff like that. I'm not so much religious anymore, but I'm a spiritual person. I have a personal relationship with the spirit of God that lives in me. But one of the things that keeps us down, honestly, is the Christian church, because we've been taught to do that to stay subservient to the system and to this whole white supremacist thing, you know what I'm saying? So everything I do is about black people. I really have no desire to include anybody else in myself but black people. Every time I shoot a film, it's where I want a black team around me, okay? I want a black production team around me. My cast are all black. I only have one white person in my first film, and that was kind of like to prove a point about something. I'm just about using my artistry to try to wake us up, to be thought-provoking, to heal our people, to get us to love us first, because that's where our power is. A lot of us sadly seem to think that our power lies in being accepted by white people or other races. That's not where our power lies. Our power lies in us looking at how we see ourselves. It's not about how other races see us. Our power is in how we see us, and we need to learn that. And that's what I try to do through my artistry. And I'm in a play next week in Montgomery County, a play which some of you may have heard of before. It's called The Meeting. And it's about a conversation between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. It's a very powerful play. I portray Malcolm X in that play. A lot of the dialogue that is said in that play, particularly by Malcolm, is still very relevant today. If anybody is out that way in Montgomery County and interested, I can leave the information in the chat. It's next Saturday and Sunday, but the Saturday show has already been sold out, and it's at 4 o'clock on those days. And so my film right now, my latest film, The Eternal Extra, is on a Black-owned platform, which is created by a young Black brother that I know by the name of Asim Amin. It's called Stream DMV, where all the content on there is basically mostly by Black filmmakers from the DMV area. So it's very important that we try to support stuff like that. And I'm also very intentional on trying to support Black businesses as often as I can. Whenever I go somewhere, whatever like that, a friend of mine is taking me out on this coming week for a belated birthday thing. And I'm like, make sure we go to a Black-owned spot. Mm-hmm. So I'm always about trying to support Black businesses as much as I can. Like I said, whatever I do is about empowering us and healing us and getting us to love us. Because one of the major things that's hold us back is the self-hatred in the Black community. We don't know our worth. We don't know about greatness. And mentioning films like The Woman King, I've been learning stuff about that film, which I got really suspicious when I found out that the writer is a white woman, which they try to hide. The person who wrote that film is a white woman, a white feminist, who claims she wrote the film because she supposedly cares about Black women, which we all know that most white women don't really give a damn about Black women, and that's just the honest truth. They'll use Black women to get whatever they have on their agenda, but they, most of them white women, don't really care about Black women. And I found out that the actress Lupita, she was originally offered that role. She was originally offered that role that Viola Davis plays, but she turned the role down because when she was first offered the role, she was very excited about it. And she went over to Benin and to do a documentary, and she found out some things over there that made her realize that she's not comfortable with doing that story. And there's also, it's been pointed out, there's a lot of lies in that film, blatant lies. They didn't just take a little bit of, creative liberty. They intentionally tell some blatant lies. And I've also heard that there's a lot of seeing Black women killing Black men in this film, okay? And about Ola Davis's main enemy in the film apparently is a Black man. Of course, they always try to pit Black people against each other, so they're not going to make white people the enemy. They're always going to make us the enemy of ourselves. So yeah.
I understand. Yeah, I appreciate that. But again, I appreciate you because like most of our experiences in life makes us think the way we do and feel the way we do, because we have firsthand knowledge that when we deal with other people, this is the type of stuff that we get. Now, you had to go through police, you had to go through rejection, you had to go through a lot of things to make you feel this way, and rightfully so. But you hit one key point on here. Everything you're saying was pretty, right to the point. But we have to learn to work it out with each other first. So once we get our act together, there ain't nothing nobody on the outside can do to us or say to us, because we can do it on our own. We don't need you, I appreciate you, sir. I'm trying to, Greg, close this thing there. I got a couple more people that I'm trying to get in there before we shut it down. Brother Haiki and Mr. William Parker, are y'all still there?
You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, I'm still here.
Mr. William Parker, now he's one of our newest editors that's coming into the publication. And where are you from? North Carolina, right, sir?
Rocky Mount, North Carolina.
Right there, right there with Brother Satari.
Right.
Matter of fact, we had a couple of North Carolinians on here.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl Ricks is in North Carolina. Brand Allen is in North Carolina. As a matter of fact, y'all outnumbering us now.
All right.
But in any case, Mr. Parker.
Yeah,
he's a new editor in the publication, and he's an author as well.
But, well, I'm trying to be one.
Yeah, but he had some issues, you know, that you know. Matter of fact, you shared with us. What are your issues with what you're writing about in your book?
Well, like let me first say that, you know, I've been listening to everybody up here tonight, and y'all got some good points. Everybody up here got some good points, and that's why we are not together as a black people. And this is the way I started out, you know, when I saw your paper, and it says us helping us equal unity. Then it went on and said, if not us, then who? If not now, then when? You know, when I was first ordained and was made a pastor, I started an organization called the Young Adult Prosperity Association. And my motto was people helping people, sharing and caring. Now, see, and that's when I saw that help us helping us, that went right in line. And what some of your other was saying out there, I was saying that the adults of yesterday should teach the young adults of yesterday should teach the young adults of today so we can have a better future for the young adults of tomorrow. And so all this bringing together, but my issue is that, you know, I've had starting out preaching the word of God and seeing like, I read the Bible over and over and through. I studied the Bible. I read everything about the Bible. I learned how the Bible was put together and everything. And as I put in my first article that you're going to be starting in October, I said that I was ordained by two organizations, Missionary Baptist Church and the Church of God in Christ. And both ordination boards declined my ordination. And I didn't, the thing was, I didn't go to them. I didn't think I was a preacher. But I was so good at teaching Bible studies and stuff like that, that they asked me if I would start a church. And, well, they were going to start a church, but they wanted me to be the pastor of it. But I didn't agree with their doctrine. But eventually, like I said, I gave in to the pressure and began to teach what they was teaching and doing with it. I was going along with the program until I ended up in a coma in 2018. And when I woke out of my coma, I decided I was going to live for me.
On that call, Barbara.
Yeah, I said, I'm going to live for me. And then I start studying, and I start, again, praying. And as the lady said earlier,
you are muted. You can mute or unmute yourself by pressing star 6.
Realign my spirit, soul, and body with the God that I knew from childhood. And I found I have gotten so many problems. And not so much I don't consider it a problem. It's that people and our people, black people, it seems to be going everywhere. Everybody running to the white man. So my goal is, like everybody is saying, is I want to teach the black man to be one. I've gone through some, talked to some groups, and I have them, I was showing them how, we were saying earlier, how the other nationalities, when they come here, how they work together, how the Africans, when they come here, they work together. When the Chinese come here, they work together. And the black people are not going anywhere, but the Chinese, the Arab, the blacks come here from Africa and they get hair braiding shops, they get other shops. The Mexicans, man, they get shops and stores and hotels and restaurants, and automobile shops, and we see the Arab, when do they get Arab? I know everywhere I've been, Arab have their stores in black neighborhoods. And we go there, but won't no black get a store. Won't no black. And shoot. And right here in Rocky Mountain, it seems like every time a black man starts up, he gets shut down. So, yeah, I figured that we need to start working together. And when I saw your paper, when I saw that, I said, let me check into that, go. Maybe they can help me help
help me help somebody else, because I can't seem to get the black to work together.
But, well, you know that, you know, sir, you know, that's the issue. But you know, we, you know, but there's pockets of people actually finally coming together and make some changes with one another. You know, we are work in progress, and yes, we do have a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do.
A lot of work.
Yeah, but you know, we're gonna get there. You know, I said
later,
we're gonna get there. But you know, it's everything starts with us. At least now you have a mindset to make some changes, and that's what it takes. Just having the mindset and then acting on it, and that's what you've been doing. But you know, I'm going to shut this thing down. I got to get to one more person. Brother Haki, how you doing, sir? Brother Haki. Might be working, this brother. It's so many things. He, how you call those people? First responder. He's also the author. He's an activist. You know, he's an entrepreneur.
You are unmuted.
So I think he may be working. You know, he can't just get on there. But I just want, you know, let you know. And plus, he takes the National Black Unity News all over Africa. And so this brother is a powerful brother in so many different, so many ways. And so, but in any case, because of the time and you know, people are very busy, and I want to thank everybody who made contribution to this conversation this evening, because as I told you before, this publication, just a small group of us on here tonight, but this will be aired all over the country, all over the internet. And you never know who's going to listen to, because they can say just a small group of us, but you hear the mindset of us. You know, if you listen to what we all had to say, it's pretty much, you know, coincide with one another. We need to lift one another up. We all saying that. We all marching to the same beat. And so it just proves my point that no matter what they say, what media say, because media is a powerful tool, propaganda is a powerful, they would tell you that we are not coming together. They would tell you that we are not doing it. But we are proof that through the National Black Unity Union, we are actually doing that. Everybody supports the paper financially, distribution and everything else. And we're just beginning. Other people going to come on board. And then just maybe, because just like they're doing in Africa with the National Black Unity News, they see this as a sign of unity. They're actually seeing a collective group of people who have come together, put their resources together, information together, to share with one another. And that's what unity is all about, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we just can't talk, but we, like I said, we're putting up our finances and everything else to make this publication go. So I want to thank each and every one of you. You know, there's still hope. As long as we are alive, as long as each one of us have breath in our body and willing to work with one another, that's a start. And so I want to thank you all for your time, your efforts, Brother Satavi. I didn't get to you, but you started it off, man. Yes, sir.
We got a caller. They're calling from Blog Talk.
Okay.
Caller 257-636. 3802. You have a question or a comment?
Yes, greetings. This is Sister Empress Chi. How are you all this evening?
Doing great.
Oh, hey, how you doing, sister?
Wonderful. Just very briefly, I didn't catch the brother's name that writes the play and so forth. I just wanted to give him a big hug virtually and let him know that he's my brother from another mother. And I would love to bring him to Philly. I would love to have him on my radio program and maybe talk with him about working with our new project that's going to be the Kujichangalia Children's Theater. So when you get a chance, Brother David,
he is right now. Brother Carl Tate, can you get this young lady your number? She's in the publication as well.
Yes, I will. I'll put it in the chat.
I can't see it in the chat because I'm on blog. I'm on your blog.
She's on Blog Talk Radio.
Matter of fact, I will forward you his number. Okay.
Great. Wonderful. And again, cool. I invite all of our sisters to join us for the commemoration of the 25-year anniversary of the largest gathering in the world. It's coming up. We talk about all these different things, but what do we support, particularly when it's historic? And so if we do not embrace our own history, someone else will certainly try to steal it. They already tried it, and, of course, they failed. But, sisters, we the ones we've been waiting for, so let's see who's going to stand up, shine up, and come through.
Amen. Okay. All right. So I'm glad you checked in. Brother Hakeem, you got your hand up?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Greetings. Good evening, everybody. Hope y'all well. Good to hear Sister Empress Chi, long time no hear, from a radio.
All right.
Radio, so.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
How are you, my brother?
Yeah, you can't see me. I'm doing well. Good to see
wonderful.
You. It's good to hear about the efforts with the Million Women March. And thank everybody. Thank you, Baba Jahi, and you, Brother David Murphy. So I'm looking forward. I'm actually, just real quick, myself and Brother Cliff will be traveling to Panama. I leave on Thursday. I think he leaves tomorrow.
Yes.
You know, just looking forward to giving a report. We're going to have some National Black Unity newspapers, you know.
Brother Hakeem, if you have time, if you need some more papers, just swing past. Let me know. I'll leave some out for you.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I'll call you first thing in the morning. So,
okay, good.
But thank y'all, and I'm glad I was able to chime in and listen in. I couldn't talk for a little bit, but, you know, it's good to hear you all. And I look forward to, you know, next edition. So working on that, and looking forward to continue this on. Thank you all. Peace.
All right. Thank you.
Peace.
All right, brothers and sisters, you know, much love and respect. And, you know, we'll be on tomorrow night at 7:30 with our sister Kathleen Murphy will be hosting. And, you know, we share a little information about the paper. And we will be back next week at 7:30. If any one of y'all want to be one of our guest speakers for either Tuesday night or Monday night, let me know, because it's time that we have to recognize one another, that, you know, so many sides or so many things to us that, you know, we just share on this call just some surface stuff. But, you know, we have so many talents and stuff. There's so many people doing so many great and wonderful things. We like to dwell a little bit deeper into our people that's involved with this publication. So, again, I want to thank each and every one of you. Call me. And those of you who already know me know that I have a lot of other tools that I'm willing to share with you to help you to get you to where you want to go. Because when you succeed, I succeed. And when I succeed, we all succeed. And I want to thank you, and I'm going to bid you all good night. Take care of yourselves.
Night.
All right, good night, David.
Take care.
Good night.
Good night, everyone. God bless.
Goodbye. That's calling.
That concludes our show for tonight. We thank all of those that listen to this broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. And you can catch us here again next week, same time, same station. You continue to be a listener to the National Black Unity News Podcast. All right. This is Tawajahi signing off. Good night.